Why do modern Christians tend to emphasize the continuity of faith, the ideal, rather than recognizing the dramatic impact of sin on God's people, as reflected in their history and customs? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide author, and we're continuing our series on Jeremiah. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas and Matilda Fry. Let's turn to that very first question that I asked. We also have some leftovers that we didn't get into last week, but it strikes me that most Christians would rather look on the sunny side rather than look on the dark side. Why is that?
Well, I think you need to say a little bit more about that, Alden, because I'm not sure we all understand. In other words, that we tend to look at the Old Testament through rose-tinted glasses? Is that what you're suggesting?
I'm suggesting that. In part because when I wrote my little book, Who's Afraid of the Old Testament God, one of the professors at the University of Edinburgh, in fact, he's one that helped get it published, said the book would never fly in evangelical circles because the note of accommodation is far too strong. Mm. Now, when I'm dealing with the tough stuff in the Old Testament, I don't know any other way of saying but God reaches people where they are. And that means you have to look at really the ghastly stuff. But the problem is, and I've used the phrase high road, low road sometimes, that most people want to emphasize the continuity, because to see how far human beings have fallen and that God reaches them where they are, that means that all of a sudden your key texts don't work quite as well as they used to. And so I think that's part of the problem. Probably about half of the people I deal with, my students, think that if God said it, it really should apply to all people, all times, and in all places. So as soon as we start to do what technically we call exegesis, which is interpreting in time and place, we are subtly undermining their sense, the sacred. Yeah. And so I'm trying to understand that, why believers pretty consistently want to look on the positive side and don't see the benefits of looking how far human beings have fallen and the impact of sin on human nature.
Well, we don't like to admit that we are really deep down in the pit, do we? we like to make ourselves better and to see our situation in a more better light. And is it possible that we do that also in this case?
Yeah, and I think we also do that because we want God to look good. You know, to us, we want to, you know, we want the most optimistic view of God. I know when I teach Hebrew prophets, students are shocked by the fact that God, for example, tells a prophet to name his children, you are not loved, you know. Or you are not my people. Wow, you know, that's like, I think also of the little verse in Jonah where it says that the word of the Lord came to Jonah saying that the wickedness of the Assyrians or the Ninevites has come up before me. So you go and you know, we have this talk about the unconditional love of God. He's like a nice, happy Santa Claus that will never do any harm. And it's kind of shocking. But I do think, Alden, though, that your points about accommodation should be listened to very carefully, because every word that we speak as human beings is within a historical time and place and context. Mm-hmm. Okay? You cannot live outside of a historical context as a human being. You cannot speak outside of a historical context. And you know, as the world has much more interaction between different cultures, we are much more aware of that today. You know, you can say something here that over there is understood in a very different way. And so how does the essence of the biblical message get conveyed in different circumstances? And it is true that where wickedness is allowed to flourish, that there are some things that cannot be said. Mm-hmm. Until circumstances have grown. And I mean, I look at, you know, I grew up in a part of the world where polygamy was understood, and people even argue for it still today. How could God address that with Abraham when there was no concept at all of monogamy? True. There wasn't any, it was unknown.
Yeah.
You know, it was a patriarchal system where you know, it takes time to adjust those things. So,
and of course, even in the story of Abraham, you know, we are shocked that God would command Abraham to sacrifice his son.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But in a world where everyone was sacrificing their firstborn son, it made perfectly good sense to Abraham.
And it was a testimony of faith that he was willing to do it.
Yes, he was. A very big
testimony of faith.
And God basically tells him up there, I'm glad you're willing to do this, Abraham. You get credit in heaven and on earth. But now let me tell you something else. You can't really sacrifice your son.
Yeah.
I provide the sacrifice for you, and there it's behind you. So
we should be shocked about God who stops the sacrifice and not about Abraham who goes up the mountain.
Yeah. That's a very good point, Matilda. Yeah, yeah. Very good point.
Yeah. That was the shocking thing.
Now, there's one piece that we need to get back to, and there is so much in Jeremiah that we're going to get behind forever. But I do think we should address a question that we didn't do last week, and that was Jeremiah's call.
Yeah.
Because Jeremiah was not happy about his call. Mm. He felt that God had twisted his arm big time. Any comments
before on that? Before he was born.
Before he was born.
Picked on me before I was even born. That's quite an admission, huh?
Yeah.
Doesn't he curse today?
Oh, he does.
Like Job?
Yeah.
Well, I think a sense of calling is a very important thing. I don't know of any prophet that jumped up and down with joy when they received a call from God.
Well, there was one who almost did. That was Isaiah.
Oh, I think he said, I think he was overtaken by a sense of duty. Well, look, Lord, here am I, send me, you know.
Well, I think it wasn't just duty, it was the sound and light show. You know, if God asks for volunteers, and you fill a place with sound and noise and light, and say, who will go here? Well, I'll go, you see.
Yeah, well, I think maybe he was overwhelmed by the glory of God and thought, if I am going to do anything significant, I need to do that. But a calling is an interesting thing because it is absolutely essential to the prophetic function. What prophet can sustain their life experience without a very strong sense of the fact that God has asked them to do this? So I don't know. Is God coercive, I guess, when it comes to calling? I don't know.
Well, I think that he does. And of course, we don't really know what God is actually like. All we know is how he is perceived. Isaiah 55:7-8, for my ways are not your ways. But it's always perceived that those who are called to be prophets felt this coercion that they could not escape.
Mm. Well, but they could have turned it down.
At such cost.
Yes, but they could have turned it down. You know, the odds are high, but I mean, you could have turned it down.
Well, Jonah turned it down, and where did he end up?
He ended up at the roots of the mountains, in the belly of the great fish.
So God came at him again.
Yeah, but he could have said no again. I'm not saying it would be easy to say no, but I'm saying that I don't think this ends up being a non-volitional. It just becomes a very difficult decision because the hound of heaven will be after you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Although I think it's very important to say, and of course, again, I'm shaped by my own Adventist heritage. Ellen White cautioned those who used her example of very frontal stuff. She says, God has not given to you the work that he's given to me.
Yeah.
So there are special works for prophets. The rest of us have to be very careful about following that example.
Yeah.
Now, the lesson that we're supposed to be talking about today is a survey of Old Testament history. So let me give just a quick nutshell here of what's happening. You go clear back to the time of Abraham, Exodus from Egypt, and then there are two key dates that I have my students memorize. It's kind of dividing the Old Testament into three parts. That which comes before the monarchy, that which comes during the monarchy, and that which comes after the monarchy. And Jeremiah takes us right down to the end of the monarchy. And one of the things that we'll be wanting to think about as we go through, what happens to your worship patterns when the temple that you worshiped in all of a sudden is gone? And not only is the temple gone, but you're in a different land. So you have all this structure just falling away. So
now, Alden, for people who don't know about the monarchy, maybe you should just say a word about that.
Okay. You have, if you go through the kinds of leaders that you have the patriarchal era. That's Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Then you come to Egypt where Moses is the leader, followed by Joshua and the judges. Then you come to the kings, and where Saul, David, and Solomon. These are the great big boys.
Yeah, so the United Monarchy is the period of time when the whole of Israel was ruled by a king.
Right, and that list lasted only down to the time of Rehoboam. And the Rehoboam, the split took place, and at that point then you have a northern kingdom called the Kingdom of Israel, and the southern kingdom called the Kingdom of Judah.
Yeah.
Though often in Scripture, Israel can go either way, so you have to look at it very carefully.
So when you come down to 586, that's the end of not just the united monarchy, but the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
See, the north came to an end in 722. Yeah. They were wiped out by the Assyrians. Yeah. Then all you have then is the kingdom of Judah. Which is where Jeremiah was. And he saw the handwriting on the wall. We'll talk more about this. But he said, the only solution for you is to go into captivity. God will bring you back.
Yeah.
But that wasn't a very happy message.
Yeah.
Now, one other aspect that I would like to mention here, and I think we might be able to tuck it in, and that has to do with the effectiveness of parental guidance.
Oh, Alden.
Because if you look at the history of the great people of the Bible, it's just astonishing. Samuel, Eli, neither one of them were able to bring their sons along, see? And then when you go to the period of the monarchy just before this, you have a good king giving bad kids, and then a bad king giving a good kid. And it just goes alternate back and forth. So I would like your wise counsel on how one explains the value of good parenting.
Well, Alden, that's an obtuse question, first of all. It's not essential to the prophets, but it is an interesting thing to talk about. You know, I don't know. I think parenting is a combination of parental influence, societal influence, and the decision-making of the children themselves. And I wonder if the good kings were so caught up in their doings that their children were left kind of... I mean, when you grow up in very privileged circumstances, it's not hard to fall prey to temptations for... And I've seen people who have nothing to do with God who are very devout children, almost as if it's a reaction against the religious vacancies of their parents. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the dynamic we see here.
That may very well be, yeah. Well, it's very interesting. Now, next week we're going to talk about the last five kings of Judah, and we'll come to look at Josiah. In fact, we'll come back to that again, because Josiah was a very good man, but it took him a long time to discover and put things together, but that's a very interesting dynamic. Next week we will also be looking at the steps by which Josiah discovered, and as we go through the quarter, we will also want to look at the amazing contrast between Josiah and Hezekiah, because Hezekiah was the last good king before then, and was a great king, great Passover. But almost none of that went through to the reign of Josiah. Mm. But we'll have to pick that up next time. I want to thank both of you for helping out with the discussion here. And I want to thank Dave Olson, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.